It is a State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here as we look at the future of the Wisconsin GOP. We're in conversation with the new leader of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Join in on where the Republican Party is headed in our state. Call in with your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. The Wisconsin GOP's executive committee elected Brian Schimming to become chair of the party last month, replacing Paul Farrow. Brian, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, great to be on with you.
Good morning. So let's start about the spring election here, you know, nonpartisan election for state Supreme Court. However, it's been called the single most important race for the Supreme Court that Wisconsin has ever seen. What support is your party prepared to offer the candidate it backs?
Well, it certainly is an important Supreme Court election with four candidates, of course, four-way primary on February 21st, and then the top two face off on April 4th. And really my job and the Republican Party job is making sure that every center-right voter in this state, whether moderate or conservative, know the differences between the finalists. And I think that's very, very important. That's what we're spending our time on. And making sure that people get out to vote. Wisconsin traditionally has pretty good voter turnout, but we want to make sure that folks that are in the moderate to conservative category turn out both on February 21st and April 4th, and we'll do that.
You'll do that. Is it, you know, it's possible that two conservatives or two liberals could advance out of the primary. How is the GOP educating voters on the primary?
Well, really, we've pretty much allowed the education of voters in terms of who they might want to pick up to the candidates. All four campaigns seem to be pretty vigorous right now, certainly. So we're kind of leaving that to the candidates, but it is not it's not hard to find out information about the four candidates. We direct folks in places to go to do that, but also just remind people. I mean, I think if people know the difference between the candidates, the more moderate to conservative candidates and the two liberals, we'll do well. And so a lot of our job is to make sure people understand the differences on who they are and make sure they get out to vote. And that includes early voting, by the way. I've encouraged early voting wherever I've been in the state, dozens of places I've spoken in the state will continue to do so. Probably a little bit of a break from what, you know, Republicans tend to be a little bit more Election Day voters. But I've said to people, look, you can't go into Election Day 200,000 votes down in the early vote and expect to make it up in 13 hours. And so we're encouraging an early vote.
Let's just pause there on early voting, because you're saying how crucial it is for Republicans to support early voting. We saw former President Donald Trump campaign against voting ahead of Election Day. What do you say to early voting skeptics?
Well, what I say to people is there are plenty of reasons to be concerned about voter integrity, voter, you know, security, to make sure everyone who's listening to us right now has their vote counted correctly. That ought to be a nonpartisan issue. So I say to folks, look, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. About 2 years ago, or before the last election, I should say, we had about 1,000 poll observers around the state. We had almost 5,000 here in this past election. So the former president's concerns aside, Ron Johnson, myself, Governor DeSantis, Governor Young, and other leading Republicans around the state have encouraged their organizations to get involved with early voting, and we'll do that.
We're talking about the Republican Party of Wisconsin with Brian Schimming here, newly elected state party chairman. You can join in along the way at 800-642-1234. Brian, we saw lawmakers recently place two questions on the spring ballot alongside the Supreme Court race, one asking voters to approve a constitutional amendment that gives judges more discretion when setting bail, and the other is this advisory referendum asking voters if able-bodied childless adults should have to look for work in order to receive welfare payments. How do you think these ballot measures will affect turnout?
It's hard to say at this point. It's really hard to say. I would say this, though, with the kind of the Democrat governor Republican legislature gridlock that we've had a lot of the last few years, Governor Evers, frankly, just flatly refusing to cooperate with the Republican legislature. A lot of times we wanted to go out and get the opinion of people on those ballot questions. And this was probably the cleanest way to do this before we got too far into the legislative session. We'll see how much it boosts turnout. I don't know that it will or not, but I really believe those issues are both, as I always say, 70%ers with the voters. Voters clearly want some changes in the bail laws. They clearly want folks in the state. If they're going to, I mean, we want to take care of people in this state, but we also want them to make sure they understand the value of work to get taxpayers' money. So those questions to me are ones that favor us. What they'll do on turnout, we'll see, but we're encouraging people to turn out either way.
You bring up this lack of cooperation across the aisle and Governor Evers unwilling to play ball. And, you know, we have seen Republican leadership has a history of gaveling in and gaveling out of the most pressing issues that Evers wants lawmakers to come together to debate, like abortion, like gun legislation, like federal Medicaid expansion. Will Republicans be willing to come to the table for real conversation on these issues?
Oh, I think so. They've been willing to come to the table for years on this. So you got to remember, the governor has openly boasted about how he did not meet with Republicans. One of the times when he met with them on the phone, he had the phone call was secretly recorded by a staff person. And so I think the governor, who's never served in the legislature or in a legislative body, needs to understand that the street goes both ways. And Republicans are willing to cooperate with the governor. I find it interesting that in the last cycle, the governor blasted the Republicans' budget proposal for weeks, months on end. Then he turned around and signed it at the last minute after claiming he hated it. So I think the governor would be better off sitting down, regularly meeting with Republican legislators. Look, I've worked as chief of staff to the speaker. I've been part of that environment. Not everyone's going to agree on everything. That's for sure. We know that. But I think he's got to be willing to sit down and talk with folks, and hopefully that continues.
And so you would expect special sessions to happen legitimately, not gaveling in and gaveling out?
Well, I don't know what they're going to do. I think you can avoid the need for special sessions if people talk to each other. I mean, there's always some special sessions, of course, and that's been no matter who runs the legislature or whatever. I mean, that's as long as I can remember. I've been around the building for over 30 years. So I don't know if it's a matter of special sessions. It's a matter of the governor's willingness to sit across the table from Republican legislative leaders and talk. And he has not shown a lot of willingness to do that in the last 4 years. I hope that changes.
Let's turn to fundraising now. Last year's statewide elections for governor and the U.S. Senate were some of the most expensive, as you know, in the country. Former state GOP chairman Paul Farrow said the Democrats outmaneuvered Republicans for fundraising that cycle. And here's Farrow on our show shortly after Election Day.
You're looking at almost $250 million. $300 million that was spent in this race on the elections. That's a lot of money, and it's one that we've got to figure out how we can either raise it or curtail it so that we can be competitive at all the different levels.
Raise it or curtail it. What is your strategy to boost party fundraising?
Well, really, what the Democrats have done when they've gotten good at is raising out-of-state money and having it pour into the state. I mean, we had third-party money coming in against Ron Johnson. I think it was over $100 million in third-party money against Ron Johnson alone in this past cycle. A staggering number. I mean, he used to run presidential campaigns for that not that long ago. So there's been a lot of out-of-state money. They've done a very good job of bringing in. Look, I haven't been able to line up Hollywood folks to raise $3 or $4 million by doing an online fundraiser with my party members. But the truth is, we have to do a better job raising money in the state and then look around the country for sources too. And I don't know that the courts or the legislature or the governor are going to be in a hurry to curtail campaign fundraising. So frankly, the party has to do a better job raising small and larger contributions in the state. That's what we're working on literally right now.
Brian Schimming, new chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, join in on party strategy, the future of grassroots efforts to get out the vote, especially ahead of the April election. as the ideological balance of the state Supreme Court is at stake. 800-642-1234. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ahead of the spring election, we're in conversation with the leader of the Republican Party of Wisconsin on his vision for the state GOP. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Republican Party Chairman Brian Schimming, who stays with us. Let's turn to last week and get your reaction to Governor Tony Evers' State of the State address. What did you think?
Well, there's always two big speeches for a governor in the spring. It's about, you know, obviously where the state is right now, but also where the state's going. And that'll be more in the budget speech, which comes a couple of weeks, three, 4 weeks down here. And so those are important speeches. I think the governor, I mean, one thing I always said when I was at the Capitol is when you have too much money laying around Madison, you need to get it out of there. Because when there's that much money laying around, the temptation to spend it or start new programs or new initiatives, some which you'll end up doing and are good initiatives to do, others which may be less so and kind of, you know, involve a question of how you're going to support those programs in the future. So my suspicion is the Republicans, again, will be of a similar mind to the governor on some issues anyway, probably less so than others. But I the economy is clearly still very, very fragile. You see it in the national numbers. There's more discussion again over the weekend about potentially slipping back into a, you know, kind of a recessionary atmosphere. So important for legislators, and I would have said this today, 10 years ago, 20, 30, 40 years ago, the legislature needs to go cautiously, and we will see what the governor wants to do. As I say, he blasted the Republican budget for months in the last cycle and then turned around and signed it. So we'll see what the governor actually means by his words when he gives his budget speech.
Well, as we you mentioned, we're sitting on this historic budget surplus. What issues right. do you see Republicans and Democrats coming together on?
There's already been public discussion about, you know, loosening up on shared revenue a little bit, not with, without some strings attached, but loosening up on shared revenue. I know there's different tax proposals out there. The governor's got some of the Republicans independently, particularly on the Senate side, have some. So I think there's probably, look, the budget document is thousands of items. It's a staggering, staggering document. And there's opportunity for them to work together. There's opportunity for them to disagree a fair bit. We'll see. I think that'll be up to both sides. And I hope the governor's on a cooperative mood.
Evers has said he is open to signing tax cuts, but opposes cuts that would disproportionately benefit wealthy residents. What tax cuts could Evers and the GOP-controlled legislature agree on?
I don't think we know yet. The truth is, I don't think the Republicans have kind of showed their hand on some issues. The governor has showed his hand on some of them. I think they've got a lot of time. The budget document, as you know, doesn't get passed generally till the end of June and then signed in the fall. But, you know, I just tell the Republicans, don't leave too much money laying around Madison. If you're going to do tax cuts, which I think our folks are interested in doing, a lot of this money we have is because, I mean, it didn't come out of nowhere. People paid it in. And so Republicans' general view is give it back whenever you have the opportunity and you have too much money laying around, give it back. And that may come in a couple forms. We'll see.
So the governor declared this year to be the year of mental health. He called for spending an additional $500 million to boost mental health services around the state.
The state of mental health in Wisconsin is a quiet, burgeoning crisis that I believe will have catastrophic consequences for generations if we don't treat it with the urgency it requires. Mental and behavioral health is as much of a health issue as it is an economic one.
So should the state expand funding for mental health services at these levels?
Well, I think that's something for the legislature to figure out. I wouldn't say one way or the other yet. I think it's an interesting discussion. I actually served on the Mental Health Council for a while, so I've got some familiarity with those issues and run youth work programs and programs in Milwaukee and all over the state and affordable housing programs. So it's I've got some familiarity with that issue. I think Republicans are willing to talk about that. I don't know if they're going to do it in the numbers that the governor wants. But I think that's something that certainly some of them are willing to talk about, and we'll see how that comes as the weeks and months go on. You know, we'll see some of that probably as the budget hearings by joint finance start in after the governor introduces his budget.
What I'm hearing from you as well is talking is the first step. You have to talk.
Yeah, that's been my experience. And frankly, that goes whether you, I mean, I've seen situations where you have Democrat governors and Democrat legislatures and Republican governors and Republican legislators that didn't always agree with each other. But I do think that's an important part of it. I think willingness to come to the table. I know the Republicans are, but they aren't willing to just salute when the governor runs a flag up the flagpole and said, this is an issue I'm concerned about. You have to do it. It doesn't work that way, and it never has. So I think the governor will make his proposals. The Republicans will make theirs, and we'll see what comes of it. As the budget process is a long and oftentimes arduous one, but I'd say let us work it through. But I think it's important for both sides to lay their positions out there. I'm not, I don't object to the governor laying his positions out. That's what he ought to do, and he ought to do it in the State of the State and the budget speech. But we'll see what he really means when he proposes his budget.
Talking with Brian Schimming, newly elected state party chairman, as we look at the future of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Just a quick glimpse here on Capitol Hill, as we saw it took House Republicans 15 rounds to elect Speaker Kevin McCarthy, and that's the most contentious speaker election in over 100 years. Are you seeing divisions in the national party trickling down to the state level?
I haven't really yet. It's interesting you should bring it up because I was out there that week. I happened to be out there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in D.C. So that was kind of historically an interesting time of being out there. But I kind of remind folks, too, as difficult as that was, because the Republicans only have a couple of vote majority in the House, as difficult as that was to kind of watch, number one, they are very unified now on the House side, the really remarkable unity. We were talking about it at the RNC meetings last week. And so I think some of the initial concerns about that going forward and the House members arguing with each other all the time, I don't see that. I also remind people the last two times, I mean, Nancy Pelosi was predicting a 15 to 20 vote pickup in the House in 2020 and did not get it and almost lost control of the House. The last two times Nancy Pelosi has been reelected speaker, I think people forget that it was after a long and pretty arduous, at least internal party kind of vetting of her, how long she was going to run, was she going to commit not to run again? That happened in both years. So they've had their share of problems too, probably a little less publicly than Republicans have. I always kind of say Democrats fight in the bar and Republicans fight in the parking lot where everybody can see them. So, some of that, but I will say this, the House Republicans have had really, really good unity since that election. So I think some of the fears that people had that they wouldn't be able to operate well, those have been cast aside.
What is Trump's role in the future of Wisconsin politics?
Well, we'll see. The president, obviously, he's going around doing some rallies here and there. I saw, there was a poll out last week. The Marquette Law poll actually was out last week showing Governor DeSantis 7 points ahead of President Biden. President Biden slipped against Ron DeSantis. He slipped against Donald Trump and others in the latest Marquette poll. So the president's in a lot of trouble. So for me, it's less Donald Trump, although he's going to be out there as a factor no matter what, but all these candidates, some of whom have now been in Wisconsin, Governor DeSantis and Governor Youngkin and Nikki Haley, all been in Wisconsin in the last 3 months, I guess it would be. So for me, it's a marvelous opportunity for the Republicans to win. The president, regardless of what happened in 2022, what people forget is regardless of what happened there, the president's poll numbers are still upside down. And not upside down by a little, upside down by a lot.
But very quickly, how could a Trump endorsement in the Supreme Court race in April affect results?
Yeah, I don't know who's talking about a Trump endorsement in the Supreme Court race. I haven't heard that. This is the first time I've heard that. So I if he's endorsing someone, I haven't seen any hint of it. I know a lot of folks in that world, and I haven't heard that at all. So I don't expect that to happen. Maybe it will, but I don't expect it to happen.
Brian, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Brian Schimming is the new chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Health Department has another $8 million coming from legal settlements with major pharmaceutical distributors over the opioid crisis. Call in with your questions about how this new funding or the state's broader response to the destruction caused by highly addictive painkillers. Share how you want the settlement funds to be used. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Paul Krupski is here, Director of Opioid Initiatives for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Paul, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back. Really appreciate it.
Good morning. So, State Health Department working to finalize numbers for opioid overdose deaths and other numbers in Wisconsin last year. What do your preliminary figures show?
Yeah, we have been able to finalize all of our data from the year 2021. And unfortunately, the final data shows what we expected, which was yet another record high for opioid-related deaths in Wisconsin, just over 1,400. And this continued the trend that we are seeing nationally, where unfortunately opioid-related deaths continue to increase. This is a trend that we have seen now for the past several years, really since the pandemic, that just obviously created a lot of challenges within people's lives, and also some challenges initially with just making sure that services were still available and individuals understanding that those care and services were still available to them. So we need to continue to do all the work that we have been doing, continue to expand and enhance those efforts that we know are helping people and are getting them the care and treatment that they need, so that we can once again turn the tide on the opioid epidemic here in our state and begin to see decreases in the number of deaths related to opioids.
2021's count of deaths, 1,427, that was a record. What about 2022?
Well, it's still too early to tell. Okay. We do put up some preliminary data as we receive it for the previous year. I believe we have preliminary data up on our webpage through June of 2022. And it shows that at this point, we're unfortunately looking at the same pace, but that number is not will not be frozen until later this year. Again, fall, late winter, there has been some delays in receiving the data just because coroner and medical examiner offices continue to be just challenged, you know, with everything that came their way through the pandemic. And so until we get all that, those finalized death records and know what the cause of death are, it just takes us longer to do that. But preliminary data that we do have through 2022, unfortunately, shows that we're probably about the same rate, maybe a little less right now, but still to be determined and a little too early to show there. But I think, you know, the key is that we have a comprehensive approach that the department has had in place for, you know, going on close to a decade now. And I just like to always remind everybody, you know, who's listening to this show and when I'm out speaking across the state, that pre-pandemic, we began to see decreases. We saw the first significant decrease in opioid-related deaths in our state in nearly two decades. So we know the work that we were doing was making a difference. We know it was creating positive outcomes in our community, not just saving lives, but preventing individuals from even beginning to use opioids or other substances in the first place, and just making sure that people have those care and treatment services that they need, recovery services as well available to them. So we know we can turn this around. We know the plan that we have in place, the work that we're doing was making that difference. But again, just as with so many things in life, the pandemic created a lot of changes. So we just have to get back on track and get people back into those services that they need.
And, you know, in the past, you've blamed that pandemic isolation on the rising numbers of opioid deaths. But pandemic isolation is now behind us. Now, what can you attribute what you're seeing in the data?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, definitely the isolation was what was played a part in what was seen across the country. But we also have to remember that just those increased levels of stress and anxiety played a huge role. Individuals that don't have healthy coping skills or coping mechanisms available to them, unfortunately, will a lot of times turn to substance use. And today is no different. People are still dealing with high levels of stress and anxiety from those issues caused by the pandemic, right? That could be loss of job, other health issues that there were created. So there's that issue as well. But the other thing, Kate, that just continues to ravage this country, and Wisconsin is no different, is the prevalence of fentanyl throughout the drug supply. That has just really taken over and has created a lot of challenges for this country in addressing the opioid crisis. If you look at our data, I think you mentioned specifically for 2021, which is our most recent, with 1,427 opioid-related deaths. Just under 1,300 of those, 1,293, had fentanyl present. That is an alarming number, and so that is fentanyl present. You know, with not just other opioids like heroin, but also, you know, fentanyl within mixed with methamphetamine, fentanyl mixed with cocaine. So it's really now becoming more of a polysubstance epidemic. We need to make sure that we are reaching out to individuals who are using any type of substances, so they are aware of the potency of fentanyl, the fact that it could be present in what the substance they're using, and how deadly it is.
What impact has decriminalizing fentanyl test strips last year had on this crisis?
I think that it's a great step. It's definitely another tool in the toolbox, and one that we will continue to expand. It's definitely one that we are, you know, still getting off the ground from a department standpoint and supporting across the state. At the end of last year, we were able to begin distributing fentanyl test strips across the state. We currently partner with over 60 providers, local public health departments, tribal health clinics, syringe service programs, where individuals can obtain fentanyl test strips for free. We want to make sure that we're getting those in the hands of individuals who need it the most. We distributed those test strips, as I said, at the end of last year. And you can go on our website, on the DHS website, to see those list of providers and be able to know where you can go in your community to get those free.
We're getting an update on the opioid crisis in Wisconsin with Paul Krupski, Director of Opioid Initiatives for the State Health Department. You can join in with your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234. Paul, in animal tranquilizer, xylazine is leading to thousands of overdoses and an alarming side effects nationwide. That's according to the White House Office of National Drug Control. What is happening in Wisconsin with xylazine?
Yeah, Kate, I think, unfortunately, you know, what we see is just that the opioid epidemic continues to evolve. And it's our job to continue to monitor that through the data collection that we have and other surveillance efforts, so that we know how to best respond to that. And unfortunately, what we see is other drugs like xylazine that you mentioned, which is an animal tranquilizer, are being mixed in with different substances. And that's why it's important for us to monitor that. Now, you're correct. It has, what the White House said is obviously accurate, and it really has hit certain communities throughout the and states throughout our country very hard, specifically around our East Coast. But here in Wisconsin, thankfully, it is definitely present. But here in Wisconsin, we have not seen it as really a main or a leading factor in what is happening. Our Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene really does a good job in monitoring this. They do testing for xylazine in OWI and also coroner and medical examiner submissions. Their 2022 data is not finalized yet, but the last numbers that were shared with me, there were over 22,000 submissions, and only 13 of those showed that xylazine was present. So it's important for us to note that it is here that we are seeing it, but it is very minimal in what we are seeing. So one of those things that we have to continue to monitor, like so many other things, but as I mentioned previously, fentanyl and other synthetic opioids are clearly the driver here in our state of what's happening, and our primary response effort focuses on that.
Let's talk about the anti-overdose medication Narcan. These kits now in residence halls on a number of campus buildings across the state. UW campuses have joined this effort. Where in Wisconsin are Narcan kits needed?
I think it's really great to see, the UW system take a step like that to prioritize putting Nalox boxes with Narcan and other supplies such as breathing masks, in their residence halls, so that students and others have the opportunity to access that should someone be experiencing a suspected opioid overdose. And I think, the answer to your question, Kate, is anywhere and everywhere. We are really trying. It's a difficult task because it takes a lot of funding to get it into anywhere and everywhere. But that's really our goal, because all of us could be anywhere at any time during our day and experience somebody who is or come across somebody who is experiencing an overdose. And so we want to make sure that it's just readily available, that everybody has access to it and knows when to get it. And so this is getting placed throughout our state. We have efforts specifically in places such as bathrooms at gas stations and convenience stores, hotels and motels, local public health department and tribal health clinic buildings, treatment providers like our opioid treatment programs, just all around the state is where we're really trying to get them placed. And, there's really no wrong answer, I think, for where they're needed.
Paul Krupski is director of opioid initiatives at the State Department of Health Services. Call in any time with your stories, your questions about fighting opioid addiction in your community, in your family, 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is slated to receive at least $400 million from national opioid settlement litigation with the major drug makers and distributors. And Wisconsin has been seeking input on where to boost resources, targeting these funds to help stem the epidemic. Call in with your questions, your thoughts, anytime, 800-642-1234. Paul Krupski is director of opioid initiatives for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services and stays with us. So, Paul, the DHS is seeking public input on how to use a second round of settlement funds, about $8 million available. What is the vision for this money?
Yes. So last year was the first year that the state began to receive funding from the National Prescription Opioid Litigation settlements. And as we move into 2023, still just the two settlements that you mentioned are the only ones that have been reached, but there are others that are still in the litigation process. And so our second year of funds that we are receiving from those is just about $8 million. And just as we did last year, we're seeking public input to help provide thoughts and information and guidance on what the department plans to propose to the legislature to seek approval to expend those funds. And I think, last year, something that was, just really reaffirming was that what we heard from the public was the investments that we are making and what we are prioritizing is what people want to see. They just want more of it. As I mentioned previously to one of the other questions, we just need to continue to expand and enhance the services that we are doing. And this goes across the continuum of care from prevention to harm reduction to treatment and recovery. So we're really looking again for that feedback. We want to make sure that we are continue to be on the right path. And then we'll do all the other things that we do, to make sure we're making data-driven decisions within the department, looking at all of the data and surveillance that we have, that the evaluation and impacts that our programs and strategies are providing, and we'll put forth a plan again to the legislature for approval in a few months.
When we talked last in April, you had mentioned that one of the things that came up in listening sessions was more education about opioids in high schools and in the school settings. Are high schools improving how they teach teens about opioids?
Well, I think you have a great memory, because that is definitely the number one thing that we heard from people last year from the citizens of Wisconsin, was that they wanted more being done in our K-12 setting. They did not think there was enough prevention programming that was going on in our schools, due to limited funding primarily. And so we wanted to make sure that was targeted. Through the plan that we submitted last year, there was some funding that went to that. The legislature did cut that a little bit, but they did keep it in there. And then they also added another strategy for specifically a community-based nonprofit that does after-school programming, so that they can provide prevention efforts there. So there is funding that is going to that. I would be shocked if we don't hear that same type of feedback this year as well. And I'm sure it will be something that we prioritize and put in our plan that we put forward to the legislature. I can't speak in depth as to what level of programming is currently taking place in not just high school, but in the elementary and middle school settings. But I would say that probably not enough. And again, mm-hmm. that's due to funding. So if we have this opportunity to provide more funds so that schools can do that, that's only going to better the outcomes later in life.
Let's bring on a call now. Laura in Keeler is with us. Laura, hi.
Good morning. So I'm a first responder, and we were at a training just all day Saturday, and we were talking about the expense of Narcan and other reactive drugs, and then their shelf life and how they expire. And for our unit, we're all volunteers. We're not really getting money from calls, because we're not an A service. So having money that could go to these local or rural volunteer departments would really help out, especially when we do have supplies and they expire and we just have to throw them away.
Laura, thank you for bringing this to the table. Appreciate it. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, Laura, thank you for your call. Really great point and great question. And so a couple things to mention really quick on that. One is that the department does support our Narcan Direct program. We're moving into our fourth year of that. And this is where we provide Narcan free of charge to providers around the state. And those provider types vary. But right now, EMS agencies are not eligible for that, but they can partner with any Narcan direct provider in their community and then obtain free Narcan that way. So I would really encourage you to go to our website, find if there is a Narcan direct provider in your county or in your community, and then connect with them to see if you are able to access some free a free stock that way. The other thing that I'll mention is specifically with EMS, please do keep your eyes open, eyes and ears open, because we are going to be having a funding opportunity shortly in the near future that's coming, that's being supported from last year's settlement funds to specifically provide Narcan and other supplies such as fentanyl test strips to EMS agencies, because we know that that is a need. That's one that we have heard loud and clear. And our EMS providers are obviously most of the times first on the scene. So it's very important. Then very quickly, last thing I'd say is that the great thing about Narcan Direct is that it deals with the shelf life concern as best possible. And what I mean by that is you are not just given it up front and then hold on to it. You order it as needed. So as you need it, you receive it. And then that limits the amount of time that actually it's, you know, sitting on your shelf and then limits those shelf life concerns that that some communities do see sometimes.
Talking with Paul Krupski, Director of Opioid Initiatives for the State Health Department. Let's turn now to Governor Evers' State of the State address, calling the year of mental health. Could more attention on mental health also address the opioid crisis?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, when we look at supporting individuals who are who have an opioid use disorder diagnosis, we need to be addressing the whole person. And when we say that, we need to make sure that we're not just dealing with the substance use disorder, but that we're also dealing with any mental health or behavioral health issues that an individual might be struggling with. If we're only treating one and not the other, we're not setting the individual up for success and for long-term recovery. So that is absolutely 100%, you know, been the focus of the department and the way that we have tried to invest and support those treatment and recovery services for folks. And the more that we can continue to expand that type of integrated care, the better support we're going to be providing, and care and support we're going to be providing individuals right away, and the better outcomes we're going to have long term.
In our last few seconds together, what is the biggest thing you hope to accomplish this year in your position?
Well, I think every year the goal is to again turn the tide in what we're seeing in Wisconsin and begin to see a decrease in opioid related deaths. You know, I'm really hopeful that, you know, we are eventually, not just in Wisconsin, but as a country, going to again reach a peak and begin to see the tides change. But again, we need to continue to adapt in our response, be on top of what is needed, and then support those efforts and make those investments where we can have the biggest impact. So we want to save lives. That's the number one goal.
Paul, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Paul Krupski is Director of Opioid Initiatives for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.